if I would turn the button on.
No.
Start over.
I don't think we'll miss much. Please note at 5:15 I turned the button on, but I have been writing notes as far as what happened so far. I apologize for that. It's not my normal job.
What is the website?
That I don't know. It'll be on the county website, though. Okay.
I've only been a former county board member since November.
Have you gotten used to it yet?
Not really. But while I was a county board member, I had the privilege of having all of these minutes typed up and mailed to me. Now that I'm a former board member, I have come to use the county's website again and again and again, and I give it AAA+. I mean, I suppose there's room for improvement somewhere, but it is easy to use. You get the past minutes, the agenda material, the attachments. It's www.co.champaign.ilus.gov. It's a treasure trove.
Okay, moving on, the next item is the election of chair, vice chair, and secretary.
We're going to make a motion to defer this item, I guess, until we have more of our members present. And I guess the next meeting would depend on our next item, when we can actually schedule a meeting where we can hopefully get full participation. So I guess we're just deferring it until the next meeting. We don't want to defer it indefinitely.
Okay, motion by Avery to defer. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Ms. Putnam. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I'll note that Mr. Matt Gladney has now stepped into the room.
Hi, Matt.
Just to update you, Matt, we've approved the agenda, had some public participation, introduced members, and so I'm going to ask you to introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Matt Gladney, Chair of the Justice and Social Services Committee.
Thank you, Matt. We've also deferred the election of Chair, Vice Chair, and Secretary to the next meeting. I'd also like to clarify, Matt, you were selected to be the temporary chair of this meeting. Do you want me to continue?
Sure.
Is there any objection?
No objections.
Seeing none. I will continue. Okay, next, scheduling of future meetings. Let me say something that Kat Bork worked very hard to try to schedule meetings where everybody could attend. It's not easy. So I guess we'll look for suggestions for other times. I'm not sure when Mr. Ammons can meet or Mr. Thompson. I could call them later on and find out.
I talked to Aaron Ammons today and about Friday. He works Monday through Thursday in a night shift, and so he couldn't come any of those.
And night shift is when? 4 to something?
Like midnight or something. I'm not sure.
That's about right.
Anyway, he does not work on Fridays, and so I was looking for a time on Friday, and I think Jenny has a suggestion about that.
Well, a lot of what I will say, any argument I could make about a best time to meet depends on how much staff support this committee would be getting. If we will be responsible for producing our own minutes, that is, if Ms. Talbot, Ms. Bork, others will not be serving us.
That's correct.
Then a meeting time really need not be pegged to the county employee's 37.5-hour work week. Initially, when Barbara suggested, why don't we meet at 5 on Friday and Aaron Ammons could be with us, I thought, oh, gee, we've stepped on the toes of someone whose weekend starts at 4:30. I don't want to ask county employees to be working on after their weekend has been done. But if we're on our own, would members maybe consider a Saturday meeting or early meeting?
Why don't you make a suggestion, if I may, just suggest a time and see how people react to it.
~2:00 on Saturday afternoon?
Or Saturday afternoons.
The other thing is, I don't know, I mentioned the staff support in preparing minutes, but I don't know how much participation you will be having from the judiciary and court administrator. I thought maybe you would want to be hands-on while you're seeing this effort get launched, and then as we go about our work, maybe you would be comfortable letting us carry on. I didn't know if you were going to have to mother pen our work or feel that was necessary.
Jenny, you have, I trust you explicitly in shepherding this session along. We've taken some steps. We've contacted some people to do some studies for us that will be eventually provided, and I will provide those to the committee. But as to whatever else the committee wants to do, I mean, that's up to them.
For myself, much as I would not want Tiffany Talbot to have to work on the weekend.
Well, let's make it clear. Tiffany would not be working.
Right, okay. Right. And I also don't want these gentlemen or the public defender or any other officer of the court to be giving up their Saturday afternoon for obvious. You would probably prefer that we could do our work, 37.5-hour work week that county.
Well, Friday at 5:00, Saturday at 2:00, and I'll make every attempt to make the meetings.
Well, okay, let's make a show of hands. 5:00 on Friday. Who can make it? Probably.
Is that every Friday?
No, just Fridays. If you want to come every Friday, go ahead. Well, okay, how about Saturday afternoons? If you had to. A little hole up higher here. Okay, well, it's less, so it looks like Friday at 5:00. I mean, it'll keep us out of the bars, right?
Can I ask, is there anybody who cannot make it at 5:00 Friday?
It's going to be another day like today.
Okay.
I'll be 5 minutes late, probably. Yeah. Okay. What about I'm going to cut off at 5.
Yeah, we can say 5:30.
Mm-hmm. Matt, are you a 40-hour employee?
37.5.
Pardon?
37.5.
Oh, okay.
Or 8:35.
8:35, okay. So it's just a matter of getting over here.
Yeah, actually 5:30 would be better for me too, so it would be better for other people.
5:30. How does 5:30 sound?
All right. I spoke with Patrick Thompson, and he said that Friday evenings, 5:30 would be fine with him as well.
All right, so...
More happy hours, folks.
I will remind you that alcohol is not permitted in this building. County rule. Okay, so date of next meeting.
Can I clarify, the group is going to be meeting monthly?
Well, depends what we want to do.
Well, I prefer to meet monthly. I think quarterly is too short.
Well,
I agree
totally. I think at least monthly.
At least monthly. And perhaps if there's some,
more.
If we need to meet every other month,
sure,
or if we
sure.
need to meet more frequently,
sure.
concise, but.
Just not every Friday.
No, it won't be that. And of course, there are certain holidays too, you know, when we want to avoid, like the Friday before.
It's going to be every third, second Friday, or the month, or how is that going to work?
Who's got a calendar? Or who wants?
I got to turn my phone back on for a couple.
Pardon?
Next meeting, May 8th.
That would be the second Friday. It is.
The second Friday, yes, May 8th.
That's not going to be
a meeting in April, because tonight we'll just be discussing, we'll be talking about what we're going to talk about, and
that's 3 weeks.
Today.
Well, there's just one more Friday in April.
Oh, okay.
Which is this Friday?
Yes, it's coming Friday.
Friday.
Yeah.
That's right. Today is the 20th.
And then the next one is May 1.
Right. So this coming Friday is the last Friday.
It's the third Friday.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's...
So are we agreed May 8th?
I probably won't be able to make that meeting, but that's okay.
What about the following?
I could do the following. Friday.
The 15th, that would be? Mm-hmm. Is anybody who cannot make the 15th?
I may be out of town on the 15th. I'm not sure yet at this point.
That's what I said.
What about the 1st?
I don't work on May 1st.
This is work?
International Labor's International Working Men's Day, Working Women's Day. This day for a parade is not...
It would be a celebration. It would be a celebratory meeting.
But I would propose May 15th.
I'll second that motion.
May 15th, how does that sound? Okay. Judge Vonis, look okay?
Yeah.
I should be here. It's May 16th, I'll be gone. That's graduation weekend for the U of I, I think. I'll be here on Friday. Okay, so agreed May 16th, 2009, next meeting? 15th, sorry. Thank you for correction. All right. Then I'll have a notice sent out somehow. Again, the intent...
Mr. White, yeah, go ahead. I have a question about if we're going to meet in this room, then... there's no problem with locking up. I mean, people have keys, and it's... It is the end of...
I can lock the door. And actually, I can show other people how to lock the door.
Thank you for being this flexible in the meeting time. I recognize that Friday evening is an atypical time to meet, but we are an atypical... We have an atypical mission.
We're an atypical group.
The members of our committee are... don't fit the 9-to-5 Monday through Friday profile.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
In terms of this meeting minutes of this meeting, you're actually taping. Are you going to have these drawn up by?
Oh well, I will write up minutes for the whole meeting.
Okay.
Believe me, they will be sketchy.
Okay.
But the intent is that. Hopefully next time, somebody will turn the recorder on at the beginning of the meeting.
Okay.
And so those will be downloaded at the website, so they'll be there. I mean, technically this is not a governing body, so we don't have to follow the open meeting. Technically, it's not a governing body.
It's not a governing.
It's an advisory body. We have no authority to spend money or anything like that to make decisions. So we do not have to follow the Open Meetings Act, but our plan is to do that as much as we can. So we will record our meetings. We will make them available. We'll have some minutes scribed and voted on. But my intention is that the meetings should be, the minutes don't have to be great detail like you expect from Tiffany and your cat. So. Again, the recordings would be available to download.
One more thing about the minutes. If a recording secretary were selected who wished and had the time to go into detail, that would be acceptable to make an account. And
by all means.
I can't compliment Ms. Ward enough for her. I've compared them to court transcripts, practically, although maybe they aren't of that quality. But there's just a wealth of information here. The downside to one of us working on minutes like that is that when I've been a recording secretary of the meeting, I have felt restrained from being able to fully participate because I'm so busy making notes. I think we would just want to know who's present, when did we meet, were matters voted on, and
That's why you see my notes are pretty sketchy. Okay. Discussion of specific items to discuss at future meetings. Judge Fonis, why don't you, you would discuss what you, some plans you've had?
One of those, Roger contacted the director of the Center for Jury Studies at the National Center for State Courts in Williamsburg, Virginia. And this person has done a study of the jury process in Kankakee County. And she is willing to review our process. We have begun to pass out to all of our jurors a questionnaire that she requested. Roger's got copies.
I think I have it.
She will then compile the statistics as to the racial makeup, and then I believe we'll coordinate that with the demographics from each local area. She will also review our the computer program that we use. I think we're one of six or eight counties in the state that uses a specific program. She will review that for us. She'll also take a look at our jury questionnaires that we provide, and will provide us with her report. And as I said, we've already begun with the questionnaires to our jurors. She wanted about 4 to 6 weeks of those questionnaires. We started beginning of April, so we'll go another couple of weeks of those questionnaires and then provide those to her, and she'll get started. And this is all at no cost, by the way.
Very good. Is this funded by federal government, do you think, or?
It's the National Center for State Courts in Williamsburg, so I'm not sure certain how they get their funding. My guess is probably through a lot of federal grants.
Okay.
And, through my conversations with Paula Hannifer Agor, who is the director, she agreed to do this as part of some of the funding that she gets at the National Center. The study itself is free. She's willing to meet and discuss the results of the study with us via telephone, or if there, you know, if we ever wanted to do some sort of web-based thing. Mm-hmm. But obviously, if we had her come out here, there would be costs involved with that that she would want to have reimbursed. But she is willing to do much of what she does over the telephone, and so far we've communicated primarily through telephone conversations and also through emails back and forth, where she sent us the survey. And she's also going to extract the data from our Jury 2000 computer system, the software, and analyze that as well. And basically what she does is compare that data with United States Census data broken down by zip code so that she can get an idea not only of the demographic information, but also based on the U.S. Census data as to the particular characteristics of the individuals living in the zip code. So I think that her analysis will be particularly useful. And I know that Kankakee County greatly benefited from their experience with her, although she did, they actually funded her to come out, and there was a lot more involvement. But I think she's learned a lot from that experience and can do a lot more remotely. So, and I happened to be see her at a presentation at the Administrative Office of Illinois Courts put on, and thought it would be a great idea to have her dig into that stuff for us and give us other information. So I asked her.
Roger, do you know if Kankakee County's demographics are similar to Champaign County?
No, that I don't know. Okay. And obviously, we can.
We can find that out.
Yeah, she can tell us. Yeah. I mean, she can tell us more about the demographics of Kankakee County than we ever wanted to know, I'm sure. So. The other thing I wanted to mention is in the piece of paper that you were giving about the members of the committee, my email is slightly incorrect. My full first name is R. Howland with a B, so I don't want anybody's emails to bounce back to them. So.
So add the D?
Add the D before the at symbol and it will be fine.
There's no such thing as a slightly wrong email address.
While on that subject,
you're irritating when people trying to get a hold of me if they had it returned to it.
While on that subject, anybody else want to check theirs?
Do you have an extra one of those?
I certainly do.
I think Aaron has a business soul JC before the ask sign, but we have to confirm with him.
Yeah, they did get a new email. So, yeah, if Kat could be instructed to double check with Aaron.
Yeah.
They do have a new email. But I wanted to ask a couple questions about the study. And I think it's great to have some more input, and I think this would be really a great contribution. So thank you, Roger, for looking it up. But can you tell me the woman's name again so I can get it?
Yeah, her name is Paula, and she's got a hyphenated last name. It's Hannaford, Hannaford, hyphen Agor, Agor. And I wanted to also let you know that there is a website for the National Center for the Jury Studies, and I'll read it to you. It's kind of long. It's www.ncsc, National Center for State Courts, -jurystudies, all one word, .org. So it's www.ncsc-jurystudies.org. And that will take you directly to her website or the website for the National Center. And again, she is the director of the National Center for State Courts Jury Studies Center. So that's what she does.
I can comment. This is an interesting tool.
It came directly from her, by the way. There were no changes or anything. It came directly from her. It's similar to the one that she used.
Since 2004, I've come to rely solidly on the League of Women Voters College of Law. I mean, this is so thorough. I mean, it'll be interesting, but what we have is so good. Mm-hmm. I have thought. I don't know if we'll be getting new information or something that's different from what the court watchers provide.
Well, and the court watchers did a great job, and Mr. Beckett's study, Professor Beckett's study is outstanding. The scope will be a little bit different. Obviously, these people, court watchers, and the students are actually in the courtrooms observing. This will give us some more general information about the population at large, specifically with results to zip codes, which I think would be very interesting to have, especially if the committee decided that outreach was something that they really wanted to focus on. They could really then target the efforts to those particular areas that needed it the most. Mm-hmm. And in addition, I think examining our data from our system also is a useful exercise. So I think that, although you're right, I think that the League of Women Voters study is very, very useful. The study from the National Center will also give us information we don't currently have, and more information is always better.
And you remember when we had breakfast, Ms. Ammons was concerned about the software that we use. Mm-hmm. And I think this woman can give us an idea of whether or not it is useful. As I said, I believe there's only 6 to 8 counties in the state that use the program that we have. Mm-hmm. It may very well be that she makes a suggestion that we go someplace, get another vendor.
Our study, your study is infinitely better than ours because ours is extremely limited. I mean, we the way that we come to a conclusion about somebody's race is by eyeballing them, not by their identification. And we don't see the whole jury pool. We only see the jurors that come into the courtroom, and you're getting the observation maybe of 4 or 5 students or in the courtroom at the same time. So that yours is much more comprehensive.
As far as season goes, do your studies usually mostly occur in the fall, and this would be
the fall semester only.
So this would be in the spring season. It might often have a few differences. Mm-hmm. Too. I had one more question about the zip code level is pretty big. I mean, zip codes in Champaign-Urbana are pretty big. Is there any way we could convince her to do it at a census block group level or something small?
It's possible, and again, we'll discuss it with her. I think historically, or at least with Kankakee County, she uses zip codes, but she may be able to narrow it down further. Obviously, she's willing to do whatever she can to help us, which and she did not have to do this undertaking or do it for no cost, certainly. So it was only because she's very dedicated to what it is that she does, and she is nationally known as an expert in jury studies. She produced an article at this magazine is well read by anybody, but there's a court manager magazine that's put out by the National Association for Court Management. She does a quarterly article in there. I think this one is about court security and juries, but she's very active in this particular arena, and she can also give us some perspective not only about what they did in other county in Illinois, but also maybe nationally, because she is involved with other studies as well.
Go ahead, Ben.
I want to ask with this survey, when is that exactly given to jurors? Because there's, of course, various steps in this whole process.
It's given to jurors basically when they arrive for jury service. So in other words, this captures only the data of those people who actually come into the courthouse and receive juror orientation. It's given to them at that moment. So it's the whole group when they're all together at once. And it is as you can tell from the text, it is a voluntary undertaking. I'm not sure what the return is yet because we just started doing this, but it'll be interesting to see, and obviously we'll have the data from that so that you can see what the return rate was and all that information.
Great.
Other suggestions? Yes, Ms.
For next time, I have read recently the reports, you know, from the League of Women Voters and Dee Beckett's group. And I need a little help in understanding them. I thought I knew what the difference was between statistical significance and significance, but I'm a little puzzled by how it plays out in this report. I'm like, how does that work? So I plan to do some work on my own about that, but I wonder if we could have some time spent just probing what these reports actually mean.
Any ideas about how to go about doing it, other than, I guess, us sitting down and seriously reading them?
We could ask Steve or Tina to come and talk about it. There's somebody, I could not explain it. We have somebody, Adam Martinsic, does the statistical analysis.
Barbara, I could suggest Professor Martinsic would have his email address be available to the university. And as a statistics professor, I'll bet he would love to explain it to you. And
well, I have a brother-in-law who's a statistics professor, so I intend to consult him. But I was just thinking that it would be good to have somebody like Steve Beckett here who could answer questions that any of us would have about the significance of the report. Now, it would be nice if maybe we should put that off until we have the most recent one, which is coming. Maybe that's the idea.
You know, and maybe I'm being naive, but I'll bet that the people who have labored over the production of these reports annually, I bet they would be gratified that people are using this as a launching pad for taking action. And you know, how many times do people work on a report and they say, well, I don't want this study to just be put up on a shelf to collect dust. There would be that pride of authorship, I think, that Martinsic would want to probably speak to the teacher, probably like to continue the teaching. I have a suggestion, and it's not going to be easy to do. This is not an easy suggestion. This goes back to the introduction of the continuous jury. Let's see, it used to be trials were held just 3 months out of, three weeks out of the month.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And then continuous jury was introduced. And I think that we've had, you know, like splendid success. I got my archive with me. What was the date? That says March 12, 2006. So it's good. Help us on the way. Court trying new tack. But at the time that we went to this continuous jury, I think at that time this questionnaire was developed, the juror qualification questionnaire.
Yes.
And when the Justice and Social Service Committee discussed this questionnaire, it was a couple of years ago, some members of the committee and some people from the public were concerned in particular about questions 8 through 13 on the questionnaire. And because I've got some extra copies of these that I photocopied over, if you you don't know what it is.
Actually, I have.
Oh, you have some.
Brand newest edition of these. We made some slight corrections just to give people information. You'll notice on these there are places where it seems like there's gibberish in places where people's names would be. That's because the only place way to print them out is to actually show the fields, the computer fields where they are. But this is basically the newest. I had them printed out today. The newest qualifications questionnaire and the newest actual summons that goes out to editors.
That would be great to have. Or recycle
copies for.
But some people thought, and maybe this has been changed, but there was concern expressed that some of the questioning might discourage people from deciding to take the next step, which means respond to the summons. And I know that there was a reason for those questions to originally be included on the questionnaire. Maybe I would like to propose that as a discussion for the next time we meet.
And then I believe part of the study that we're going to get from the National Center is she's also going to review our questionnaire and compare it to some of the others. And you're specifically talking about, have you or a close member of your family currently charged with committing any criminal offense? Have you or a close member of your family ever been convicted of a criminal offense? Are you or a close member of your family on probation or parole? Have you or a close member of your family been a victim of a crime? For the most part, and I've gone over this with the judges, we realize this is sensitive information, and the attorneys understand that. So when I have a juror in the jury box, and they've checked that, and a close family member of themselves has been committed, has been charged with, or convicted of committing an offense. The only question I ask is, did that offense have anything to do with what's on trial? So if we're trying an aggravated battery, did that conviction have anything to do with aggravated battery? I don't really want to know about it. And the attorneys, for the most part, are good about that, except I really can't limit their questions. So at least I'm seeing a trend that we're being a bit more sensitive to those questions. But obviously, the issue is, should all of these questions be there? Which ones, if any?
And this was modeled, by the way, off of the other counties that use judicial systems. This wasn't something that was created from scratch. This is something that the system produces. And as such, it was pretty much the same as what other counties use. So this wasn't something that we actually developed in-house as far as each individual county.
Roger, you said other counties that use judicial systems. So is there another system?
There are many different jury systems. I mean, just like you can find with any software, there are multiple vendors and that you can go to. Judicial systems has a good reputation.
So you're talking about the particular system. Okay. Judicial systems is the name of the software.
It's actually the name of the software. The name of the software is actually the Jury 2000 system.
Okay.
But Judicial Systems out of Tyler, Texas is the actual company that will actually provide those systems.
Well, I thought that it was one of the reasons for having those questions 8 through 13 about your or family members' experience was that those questions would be asked in court eventually during voir dire, and this was the way it was theorized to save time. However, if this is the first thing the juror sees in deciding, am I actually going to show up, or am I actually going to return the thing? If it's such a turnoff that it deters people from going to the next step, maybe it's working against our purposes and not furthering our purposes. I don't know that.
Well, you're right. The question would eventually, if we didn't have these questions here, and the people that check no, obviously the attorneys don't ask the questions. Those that have checked yes, they will follow up with that. Basically, the most important one, have you or a close member of your family been the victim of a crime? And again, the only question I ask is, did that victimization have anything to do with what's on trial here? And with sex offenses, domestic violence offenses, you find a lot of people who have had experience of family members have been victimized that way or themselves. And quite frankly, they acknowledge that they would find it difficult to sit as a juror in a case like that. So the attorneys have a right to ask these questions. It's just that again, does that cause someone to say, well, I'm not even going to talk to them?
And again, obviously, how they respond to those questions has no bearing on whether or not they're called for jury duty or what in what order or when they're called for jury duty or whatever. It's simply providing information to the attorneys to speed up the process.
Trish, you have a question?
I did. What I'd like to, you know, this whole discussion is real interesting, but I've been doing a lot of research trying to establish what is legal. I mean, what is legal in terms of who can serve as a juror and who cannot serve as a juror? And so some of those questions might be, you know, just be intrusive because it doesn't mean that you can or cannot serve. So we really need to know legally who can and who cannot serve as a juror. And I, you know, so I would like to have that, maybe some kind of a definition. And the other thing that I've always been very curious about, and I've gone out and looked it up, and in terms of the Illinois State Bar Association, how do they define a jury of one's peers? And so it's interesting the definition that I've come up with. But what is the definition that we are in search of when we talk about a jury of one's peers? The one that I've read is it's a guaranteed right of criminal defendants in which peer means an equal. This has been interpreted by courts to mean that the available jurors include a broad spectrum of the population, particularly of race, natural origin, and gender. And so I think that's if we as a committee would have definitions of what can they establish, what the court interprets or what the legal determination is. If I've seen different definitions of what that means, it would be nice to know exactly what that means.
The people that make it to the jury box, I mean, obviously those are the jurors, but on a felony case, each side has 7 peremptory challenges, which they can use, and as long as it's not racially motivated or discriminatory, they get to excuse any 7 people they want. What we're trying to do with the state courts program in Virginia is to make sure that we have an appropriate, adequate, representative number of minorities in a big pool.
Yes.
And quite frankly, if you've got a defense attorney or a prosecutor who's bound and determined to exclude people, and you have a large number sitting in the audience waiting to sit, you've only got 7 peremptory challenges. So if I want to get rid of what looks to be conservative old white men, and there's 15 of them sitting out there, and if I've only got 7 challenges, or African Americans, if I've got a larger number in the pool, then I think that's the way we would ensure that we get the 12 people sitting there that hopefully adequately are represented. It's up to the court to make the determination that the peremptories are not being used for the wrong reasons, and there's a whole process that we have to go through for that.
If you look at Section A on the questionnaire, there are three basic questions that are asked there. Are you 18 years of age? Are you a resident of Champaign County or a United States citizen? To the best of my knowledge, those are the three basic questions that have to be asked, and that's it. Those are the ones that get you above the threshold. Are you 18 or older?
Right.
Are you a resident of Champaign County or are you a U.S. citizen?
Yeah.
That's the legal definition.
Yeah.
So, and that's the reason why they're in Section A and up front, because obviously if someone checks no to one of those boxes, clearly
they are not
eligible to sit. So that's to answer your first question. I think that is the pure legal definition of who is eligible to be a citizen.
Okay, so right now, just now we are learning a little bit more about the process, and so that's probably something that if we can have at a glance how this whole process of,
I think reading some of the minutes from the last 2 years when you guys talked about it helped me understand the workflow a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we need to have kind of an overview of Like, what I'm not clear on is if they don't send this back, can they still get a summons? And
no.
If not, why not? Why couldn't they get a summons and then fill this out when they come in?
That's part of the process, but the reason that we went to this particular system is that before, when we would send out, we used to send out summonses. That's all we would send. We would just send a mass number of summonses, but the return rate was so low. In other words, the number of people that actually showed up when they got a summons was very, very low. So what we decided to try to do was to send out the questionnaires, thereby having people indicate whether or not they could serve. Okay? And so then when we could actually go to send out the summonses, we only send out summonses to those people who have indicated that they can serve and that they're eligible to serve.
Plus, we have a better address.
Right. And the data that we get from the state of Illinois through the Secretary of State is also sent through a change of address database. So if someone has changed their address, if it's outside of Champaign County, obviously they're no longer a resident, we qualify. And if they are a Champaign County resident still, but at a different address, we simply send the summons to the proper address. So again, it's all about getting a better, easier way of actually getting the numbers that we need. We send out 125, or we summons 125 jurors a week. We average about 90, over 90, somewhere between 90 and 100 that actually show up. That is a much higher percentage than what we used to get when we simply blanketed summonses and hoped that people would show up. So that's the reason why we
sent out 500 summonses, and we're lucky if we had 100 people show up.
Yep.
Has it ever been tried in any other, because I've just really started looking into researching how juries are selected and the different methods of selection for jurors. Now, I've talked to a lot of my friends, and I, being one, I've only been called to serve once, and it happened to be at a time where I was the chair of the board, so they really just excused me from serving. But there are a number of my friends who have not been called, who want to be called, that I'd love to serve. Is there a way that maybe possibly they can actually volunteer to put their name on a list? I mean, even in the database, so they can get in the rotation.
Here's why. If you did that, you would have people who would want to serve for not the most pure of reason. They might have an issue, so it's always...
No, put them on an active list and then throw them in the rotation.
Well, it's always at random. And
the law doesn't...
Alan Kurtz is dying to say
it. Oh, shoot. But I just know that we can guarantee
I too have had friends who have been in the community for 30 years.
Yes.
Never
hit the number on the head.
30 years. Never been called.
30 years. And we haven't had one
invitation
to join the justice
system. Right,
I've had
I know.
People who have been here 5 years who have been, summoned twice. So it's completely random.
I had a niece that was called off the time. I said, my goodness, how do you get called?
It's completely random.
Yeah, I asked the same thing at one of the justice meetings.
Okay.
The same answer.
I didn't know.
You can't volunteer for jury service.
To put on a list. I'm just saying to get on a list.
It's not random anymore.
But I mean to get on a list where you can get into the random list.
You're on the list.
You're
on the list.
You're
on the
list.
That's like putting yourself in
the
list.
Okay. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah. I want to throw out something that is... I don't think it has a quick answer, and I hope it's a thread that we can continue through our many meetings. And it may be kind of obvious, but I just wanted to, something that I chew over a lot. And that is, not every person from the same race is cut from the same cloth, so to speak. And I think it's definitely good to look at race. I'll relay, for example, where I'm coming from with this is I'll relay experience I had about 2.5 years ago. I was called by summons and actually got as far as into the courtroom, but I wasn't one of the people called up to be questioned. And the defendant was African American, and when the jury finally got seated, I think there was one African American. An African American female on the jury. I think everyone else was Caucasian. And it's interesting. Technically, for example, this jury representation survey, if I were to complete this, I would actually be under multiracial, not just African American.
while sitting in that courtroom, though, I was of the mindset of being African-American, though, and I was like, oh, man, I wish I could, you know, sit on this jury and, you know, be another African-American there for the defendants, not because, I had some agenda about, you know, getting them off or something necessarily, but just because, I had in my mind that, jury of one's peers. But I've thought a lot about that since then. And on the one hand, I think I've thought, like, well, that was a noble sentiment, and perhaps not incorrect. But on the other hand, I have no clue what that defendant's life was like up to that point. And it could have been very dissimilar from my own. And while we partially share the same skin color, the thought occurred to me is like, what, you know, getting back to Ms. Avery's mm-hmm. question about a jury of one's peers, you know, would I have been a, just because of skin color, would I have been a peer of his in the sense that some people think about it, or not? And I just, that's not a quick answer, but I just want us to think about it as we have all these meetings. Of what constitutes a jury of one's peers, and that, you know, one African American is not necessarily
their experiences don't have to be the same,
and so on and so forth.
But it certainly, if I were a defendant, someone sitting being judged, I think I would find some. I think I would feel some comfort in knowing that there are people that are sitting on the jury that look like me. That I'm an African American female, middle aged female, that I'm not being judged by some 80, 70, 80 year old white men, all white men. I mean, who may not be able to even relate to my culture, my experiences. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we have the same experiences. But I certainly think that if you are being judged of a jury of your own peers, even though you're not going to have those things, it does, I think, make the person who is being judged give some sense of this is going to be a fair process, because we do have, when people think of jury of their own peers, I do think that they think that there are people that look like them. And that can relate to them culturally and otherwise.
I do. I can agree with that. And because going back to my experience, I think that it was to put it lightly, a shame that there was only one African American on
that
jury.
Yes, I do.
Not that there were many of us that were to choose from. I was looking around that room. There was myself and the lady that got selected, and I don't think there was anymore. Just that, I just want us to keep in mind that, you know, there could have been five or six African Americans on that jury. How well, and if perception wise, if that defendant felt like they were getting a fair shake because of that, I guess on the one hand that might be important, but in reality, are they? I don't know.
Well, not necessarily, because you have to judge, you have to look at the way the based on the information that you get from the courts. I mean, you have to look at all of the evidence in the case. I mean, so I know that people sitting there are going to judge fairly, mm-hmm. whether you're black, white, yellow, brown, you know, that's not the, but the fact that you feel like it's a fair process because you do have a diverse group of jurors, I think is,
I guess I'm just going to
can't say on. That it wasn't.
I just want us to focus, my opinion is we should be focused on fact as much as we can. Is it a fair process? Not does it seem like a fair process? You see what I'm saying? Not that somebody perceived it to be, but is it?
Well, I think that the representation should be as balanced as possible given the demographics of the community in which you live, work, play, whatever.
And I just want to make clear, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that. I just don't want us to overly focus on appearances, physical appearances, in this necessarily.
Again, getting back to the 12 people that sit in the jury box, the defense attorneys look at that. And just because you might be, the client might be African American, I've had the experience where African American jurors called to the jury box, Marine Corps veteran, works for a security company, defense excused him because he didn't have the same obvious background, the same. So the defense attorneys look at that, and they're not just picking people just by the way they look. And they also discuss with their client before they make any decision on peremptory challenges.
All right, Jenny.
I have some more suggestions for things to look at during this meeting. I'm sure that Judge DeFontis was thrilled to see this letter to the editor last December. Positive experience during jury duty. And I don't know if you know Ray Rice or Ray, but this is somebody who had a good experience and wrote about it. And the letter mentions being greeted on Monday by an attendant and given a juror badge and information. And then we watched a video. And maybe it would be good for all of us to see what that first. Oh, it's not referred to as first day of the term because court is in continuous.
It's orientation, it's juror orientation.
We could probably bring that that video in.
Or I think if we could be there, or would we would no, that would offset it. Right. Offset it. Okay.
I think we just no, if you wanted to see the video, we'd have no problem. It's on a DVD disc, and we can.
I think we should do that.
We'll probably bring up some way of showing it here.
Right. And
it's, Judge Ladd, by the way, does the orientation, and then that's usually supplemented by Sergeant Carlton to give security issues, and also our one of our jury quarterly orientation. Gets all the information.
In a previous discussion with Judge DeFontis, the matter arose of getting good cooperation from the business community to encourage businesses to have in their personnel policies the fact that employees are excused from work when they're summoned to jury duty and perhaps could be paid their standard salary during the day or days that they have to be away to be in the courthouse. And I know every business is facing unprecedented financial struggles these years, if not just this year. And if we could think of a way of using a carrot, not a stick, but to honor, perhaps through the
Sorry, Jenny. Could you out in the hallway? Could you please take that conversation down the way?
To work with some committee at the Chamber of Commerce to encourage their employees to respond favorably to the summons. And one way to get that positive response to a summons is to pay your employees their standard pay, despite the fact that they're being absent, rather than expecting a person to take personal leave or a vacation day.
And that's one of the reasons why I went to the 1 week jury service instead of two, so that it wouldn't be so burdensome to employers, so that they could possibly afford one week versus two.
And we met last lunch with Deb Busey and the representative from the chamber about this issue and gave her a copy of the code that says if you're an employer, you cannot interfere with your employee's jury service. And I had that happen in the middle of a trial. The juror said, I can't come back tomorrow. My foreman said I won't have a job. And we had to contact that person. But we've talked to the chamber about that, and we never really got any further than that because I realized that eventually we're going to set this up. And I think they would be very amenable to discussing this. And we also talked to somebody from the NTD, that was when their gas prices were out of sight, about getting the tokens to write.
There's more work to do.
Oh, yes.
And we did raise the rate of mileage to try to help jurors ease the gas burden, especially when the gas was $4 a gallon. It seemed a little bit ridiculous at the moment.
Also for next time, and this is one of the reasons I'm so pleased to have Erin Ammons on our committee for outreach, and Tricia also being connected to young people, but to do the kind of public awareness campaign that Erin is uniquely suited to enthusiastically get on board with. Some public service announcements that would be played in venues, in places that young people listen to. Mm-hmm. I don't go there. I don't know. I'm not that young. I don't hang out where the people hang out who need to hear that when you get the summons, it's cool. You got to be there. For a jury or your peer, you got to be there. Show up. Now, I can't do a rap song, but Aaron could. And, you know, we could talk about how an essay contest, a rap performance contest with prizes. And, you know, like any other public awareness campaign, whether it's asking people to be donate blood to community blood service or AIDS awareness, I mean, this has to be a multifaceted campaign. Mm-hmm. People understand it's yes, it's good citizenship, and yes, it's the law, but it's also cool. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm so ignorant. I thought that with the advent of court TV dramas, I thought people thought it was cool. You know, it's, of course, you know, I think it's fascinating. We know the real TV is not like that, but people should want to go.
The response I get from jurors is when they get the summons, they dread it. And for those who go through the experience and actually sit on a trial, they find it to be a very positive experience. And at the end of the term, when I have my last jury, usually on a Thursday or Friday, and they reach a verdict, whatever it is, I go back to the jury room and I tell them, our system doesn't function. It cannot function unless we have citizens ready, willing, and able to come in and serve. And I thank them for that.
A great recommendation is to pursue like a testimonial public campaign mm-hmm. where people who have served on juries.
Mm-hmm. And we have gotten some letters yeah. about that.
But not just, I mean, okay, why December of 08? I haven't seen one since. I mean, it was so unique, I cut it out and saved it. They don't come that often, and a lot of people don't read it, every letter that's submitted to the News Gazette. But I like your idea of having radio and TV testimonials with the voices of people, regular folks. That'd be great.
Yeah, we can always ask for volunteers from the jurors at the end of the term.
Yeah, great idea.
I also think it would be worthwhile to try to find out what they teach at schools around here, too. Now, our newest member, Ken Turner, might be able to help us out on that.
We do give tours of the courthouse. I mean, I do get calls.
Well, it does happen?
Oh, yeah, I get calls, especially this time of year in the spring when teachers are looking for field trips and whatnot. I've had every age from kids who are barely mobile to seniors in high school come in and bring them into the courthouse, explain to them how it works. They come into a courtroom, they see the way the court is set up, they answer their questions. Mr. Beckett does a presentation for the kids at Holy Cross where he actually does a mock trial, and I participate in that. Mary Shang from the News Gazette also participates as the fictitious victim of a purse snatching, I think it is. But we do provide outreach in that way, and I never turn down anyone who makes a request.
Do you think that most of the high schools have toured the...
It varies. I wouldn't say most. It just depends on the particular time of year and whether or not they want to. I would say maybe half of them have. And it's usually, you know, one class. It's the government class or whatever, you know, that particular class is that has an issue. And obviously we open up our courtrooms whenever I can. I also get court security involved so that they understand that phase of it, so they understand why they just walked through the metal detector and why it's important and all of that, those sorts of things, because a lot of them were probably too young to remember 1997. We do, in that way, we always have our doors open for people who want to come in and do tours, and not just students. I've also had tours of other groups who wanted to come in, and obviously we do that as well.
I have another question about the process. How much of the kind of random selection is actually law, like determined by statute? We're talking about getting a jury of one's peers, and it occurred to me it would be just about statistically impossible to get 6 African Americans on a jury in Champaign County, because we're 13% African American, probably 10% over 18. So you're probably lucky to get 1 or 2 on average. I doubt if you get more than 3 or 4, but you could use methods of oversampling to generate different results, but I wonder how much of that is illegal.
It's basically completely strictly random, and the data that we get from that starts the whole process comes from the Secretary of State through either a person who's a registered voter or who has a driver's license or ID card. Mm-hmm. And so that general data comes into the system, and then that actually goes, it gets put into our software and gets done. But there's, as far as I believe, I don't believe it's legal to do any kind of tinkering with these strict random sampling. But in fact, the last time I looked, some of the statutes even talk about how they, you know, draw at random, because some of the statutes haven't really been altered since the days when they didn't have computers and it was drawn.
That information I gave you with the counties that use our system are highlighted in yellow, and then the agency there's a bunch of other stuff.
I think you answered the question by saying there's no way that if one, like I said, my niece had been called two or three times, she was getting called a lot, and we were wondering how she was getting called so much, coming up so randomly, and we weren't. But there's no way that those people who have been called, and I know there have been others that have been called on a number of occasions, to be not thrown out of the random selection, but if their name comes up and you saw that they started like within the last year, is it a way to bypass that name, and so the chances of someone else getting called in that random selection increases? Is there a way that that method can be used just to ensure that you're not over, you know, the randomly, because they are picking some of the same people are getting called, and then
That's the problem with random selection. I've had people who've been called five times.
I know it.
And I've had people, you know, who are in their 60s or 70s and never been called at all.
I know. Got to be a better way to
do it. And
where we can at least look at those people who have served.
Well, having served within a year usually gets you disqualified anyway. But the other thing is that obviously anybody who feels burdened, whether they're burdened because they've been called so often or they're because of hardships, and there's a statutory list of what the hardships are, can obviously contact us or come to the jury commission, which meets right in this room once a month, which is placed on the information on the summons so that the people know exactly where to come, and they can say, look, this is a burden, I can't do this, for whatever reason, whether it be a financial hardship or they have health issues or whatever, and they can come and make that request, and the jury commissioners, although they are tough people to get past because they don't want to give out too many excuses, are also very compassionate and understand that there are a lot of circumstances where it's just not feasible for people to serve. Mm-hmm. So there are ways of getting out of it if you believe the obligation is too much for you to handle at this time, you need to be set over for another time in the future, or you can ask to be excused.
And then that goes into another. Or you already have a bank that you've chosen from randomly.
Right, and if there's someone that's set over, we ask them specifically, and you can tell from the questionnaire form, I can't, you know, I have friends who are farmers who can't serve during crop season, but in the wintertime, they'd be more than happy to serve, or there are teachers who have the summers off who would rather serve in the summer.
Right.
And obviously, they have the opportunity right on the questionnaire, which is another reason why we use questionnaires, to indicate that there's a better time to serve, and then they are put in that pool for that time. We do everything we can to respect their wishes.
How often are names pulled out of the hat, so to speak?
How often are they? Well, we get the data from the Secretary of State annually. So that's done once a year.
Okay.
And then basically the list is done. We send out 200. Right now we do about 200 questionnaires a week.
Okay.
They're mailed out, and then when the information comes back, then we have, again, we send out 125 summonses of those who have answered the questionnaire that they can serve. Right now, I believe, and I have the data, and I can look at it if you want, but I believe right now we're getting about 35% who don't even respond at all.
Right. And so how
if you don't respond at all, then we have about 16% who come back and request an excuse for one reason or another. So we end up with somewhere in the high 40s for actual folks who are willing and able to serve.
You send out those questionnaires once a month?
Once a week.
Is that random?
The questionnaires, yeah, we just ask for 200 and the computer spits out 200. It's not any particular list.
Do we have any control over who gets that questionnaire? Can we send that questionnaire out to every registered voter?
Well, I mean, you could, but again, it would have to be. In theory, you could, but then you basically the data would be so large. I don't know what we would actually do with all that information. We obviously could do that, but it's much. We do send them out 200 at a time, and we initially sent out 4,000 when this process started. On the very first send out, we sent out 4,000. Just to try to get some numbers in our system. And then we keep enough people in the system so that we can handle whatever comes down the line as far as the number of weeks and how many people. Right now, I believe Shirley Marshall told me we have about 10 months worth of individuals in the system. So that's why we used to send out 400 a week. Now we've cut back to 200 a week because we have enough of a bank in the system. And the other thing is if you send it out all at once, people's lives change. Information changes, so it's much better to send it out more gradually to get actual accurate information. So there is an actual reason for doing it piecemeal. And then we get fresh data to get again in a year, and again that data is washed through the change of address system.
Matt, do you have a question?
5%.
He can't see. He can't see what.
So one sure way to get out of jury duty is to not respond to the questionnaire.
And there's nothing we can do if we don't have information on you.
And also, if you do respond and then you get a summons and you don't respond to it, does anything happen?
At the current time, we could send out the sheriff to request your presence, or if there is a way to find someone in contempt of court. But right now, we're getting enough of a response, especially with the summonses, where we have enough jurors. So as far as the sheer number. So right now, the enforcement is basically just trying to get out there and get people. But we have had people who, when we've called them, do not want to come in. And then Judge DeFantis has a chat with them and gets them to arrive. So we do have an enforcement mechanism in place if we ever had to do that.
And my last question is, maybe we can find this out from the Paula Annaford. I don't. But I was wondering how that compares with the consequences or lack of them compares with other counties and other regions. Because I used to live in Chicago, and I had this sense that if you didn't respond to the summons, you were in big trouble.
Well, and I think that every county, right? Every county handles it a little bit different.
Okay,
Macon does. Macon, I think when Judge Granius was the presiding judge, he had warrants issued. They didn't appear for some summons. Unless we want to go that far, and then they would come in, and he would fine them $100 in costs. And I was never comfortable with the mechanism. Is it indirect criminal contempt? Is it, because nothing was ever filed other than the fact that they had a summons returned, they didn't appear, and the next thing you know, they were hauled into court. The enforcement process, if done appropriately, would be time consuming and quite frankly expensive. Mm. And since the county's broke, that's something we also have to.
Well, as I said, in Cook County, it was just an impression. I've never heard of anybody who got a warrant put out for them. But no. You would get a repeat phone call. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if you didn't respond, then somebody would call you up at a very inconvenient hour, like 6:30 in the morning, this happened to me, and said, where were you? You know, are you coming?
And we do call. If someone comes in, we'll have it happen. We'll come into the orientation, and they're told to come in the next morning, and they don't show up. Well, then we make contact with them.
Unfortunately, I have other obligations, so I have to leave. But I will also say that we did experiment with sending out a second summons or a second questionnaire to those who didn't initially respond and got a very low return on our initial investment. So it is something that we did try as far as that. But again, you have to remember there's cost in postage
sure,
and processing
yeah.
and all of that. So what we're really trying to do is get the biggest bang for our buck. Again, I'm sorry I have to leave early. If you have questions for me, Judge DeFantis is more than capable of answering them. But if you need something from me, my email is there and my phone is available also.
But the 35% that doesn't respond, that's the group I think that we need to concentrate on. Why haven't they responded, and what's the problem? And that's hopefully where we can get some better information, because that's the body that I think would give us a better demographic.
More diverse.
Mm-hmm.
have a question. When you're getting this data to send out, how are the people selected? Are they selected by the location and where they live at, or their age, or their race, or their name?
When we send out the 200 questionnaires a week, the computer randomly gives us 200 names and addresses. And that's how we do it. That gets back to, as Ms. Ammon said, well, maybe we need to take a look at that computer system, and that's what we will have done.
It's from registered voters and people who are licensed to drive cars or have a state ID.
Do you get double the chance if you're both, or do they eliminate?
I understand.
No.
That
anyone shows up once. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. Those are the three things, registered to vote.
Go ahead.
I know that in some places jurors report on a Monday, and then they find out if they're on a jury, and then they go home and they come back for their jury service.
They do that in the federal court system.
Uh-huh. Does that work or not for us?
No, not for us. Not with a week. We only have them for 1 week.
Uh-huh.
And what we do is they come in the morning, they get their orientation, they fill out all the information. 30 or 40 of them, if I need a jury that afternoon, 30 or 40 of them are told to report to back to the jury assembly room. They're brought up for my trial. The rest use the call-in number in the evening to see if their services will be needed the next morning. So they call in, and if their number isn't on the machine, they don't have to come in and call in the next night. So at least we try to, in the old days, you showed up on Monday for 2 weeks. You showed up Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
And you sat there for 2 weeks and not even getting close to a courtroom. So at least we're trying to make it a little bit more palatable. But the federal system will do it that way. They'll bring in jurors. And part of it is because they're like in the central district, they're bringing them in from all over the central part of the state. But we really could do it that way with our 1 week jury selection.
I'm wondering if we could try to wrap this up, maybe decide what we want to do next time. I would suggest we take a look at the orientation.
Okay.
How long does that last?
About a half an hour, 25 minutes.
Why don't we look at that, and then maybe
I'll also bring in a set of jury instructions.
Right, and then maybe you and Randy go through the process after that. So we've talked a lot about it. Now it would be nice if we got it started in the order it actually occurs.
Yeah.
Does that sound good?
Oh, sure.
Would Steve be ready by then?
I don't know. Probably not, but I don't know.
Brian has a question.
If I can just clarify that we sort of walked through the process, whether Roger Harlan would be able to do that, because just watching the video in isolation doesn't really, of course, can convey everything, and even just going through the process in a room doesn't really convey. And, I wonder how many people in this room have served jury service. I know I've been through the process, and so it's
I got rejected.
To watch it.
Yeah, it would be nice if our committee maybe.
But just to be step, I think a lot of our questions are preliminary, so just to be walk through the process step by step would be.
And again, if anyone wants to come in, since we're running trials every week, with the exception of some of the holiday weeks, call up Roger and come in and watch jury selection.
I thought he was frowning on that.
No, he was frowning on being down there for the orientation.
Okay.
But you come in the courtroom and sit there and watch jury selection.
Oh,
yeah. Is there, that generally happen like at 9 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
It depends. On a Monday afternoon, I'll start my jury selection at 1:30. If the trials go away, then I'll take it to 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
Judge Clem does his at 9 on Tuesday morning. It just depends on the courtroom and how you rotate through your trials. But, yeah, you're welcome to come in and sit there and watch it if you've got the time.
Sounds like a good idea, actually.
We've got a lot to meet at our next meeting. We have a lot of action.
Are we going
to
put all of that on our...
No, I think again, next year we'll watch the video, then we'll have Roger, Judge Afanas go through step-by-step process, jury selection, then discussion of that. That should take easy up to an hour.
Maybe our educator will be here, and by now the next legal voters travel out because the court watch report will probably have been made public.
And once we get our questionnaires finished and send them off, we'll get a rough idea of what kind of a time frame she'll have for getting this report.
Great. Thank you so much for bringing these.
And Brian said step-by-step process. I don't know exactly what he meant, but what I am thinking of is that we spent quite a bit of time on sort of the very front end, but we need to cover that again, what randomizing means. You know, what, how you start, not where you start as a juror, but where the process begins. I'd like to go step by step through the process, including the computer program. And, you know, so how juries are selected from the very beginning to where they end up in the jury box.
Yeah, hopefully, again, that will depend on the report we get from the National Center. As I said, I'll have Roger get in touch with her and find out if she can give us a ballpark idea of when her report would be ready. But she had indicated she would review our software to see if there's any problems with how we're utilizing the information the Secretary of State sends us.
Yeah.
Okay, Trish.
Just one quick question: when she completes her report, would she be willing to share her data or her analysis with this committee, or would that come through you and Roger? Would
if
Roger?
If it's us, I'm going to give it to you.
Okay, so Roger or
yeah,
you would
no,
be.
Whatever.
Because we don't want to pay her to come and do that.
No, and we're broke. But
yeah.
any information that we get from her. We'll be here with you.
Well, Roger said she could do a conference call, didn't he?
She could, yes.
Yeah.
And that might, again, these are something, let's see what she provides with us, to us, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. Brian?
Just I want to clarify, as an agenda item for the next meeting, hopefully we can decide the chair, vice chair, and secretary positions, in addition to the other list of work.
You'll be on there again. Okay, further discussion. Okay, on the agenda we have one more chance for public participation. Nobody wants to? Okay, we're adjourned. It's 6:31.
Thank you so very much.
I don't know what's going to be on next agenda. We got so much stuff to put out.